You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome to the Transition Wild Podcast, the home for those looking for expertise and inspiration on all things Western big game hunting. I'm your host, Adam Parr, and you're listening to episode number 40, where we talk with Brad Delman on Western shed hunting. All right, thanks for joining me again on the Transition Wild Podcast, hosted on the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network. All right, some big things going on. The TransitionWild.com website, I have up and running the 2019 Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide. This has been new and improved for this year. So if you don't know what that entails, it's a 10-page PDF that I've put together that covers everything elk hunting in Colorado. Archery, rifle, scouting, when to hunt, where to hunt, breaking down different units, and big game draw, over-the-counter opportunities, gear recommendations, articles on tactics and strategy, kind of all the above. So it really kind of gets you started with elk hunting in Colorado. And new for this year, what I've included in the guide are some discount codes for savings when you go purchase some of the gear and the products that I know and love and have used for the past couple years hunting here in Colorado. Those companies are Heads Up Decoy, Real Game Calls, Onyx Maps, and Outdoor Edge Knives. So definitely go check out that. All you have to do is go to transitionwild.com, subscribe, and I will send you that Colorado Beginner Elk Hunting Guide for free. So that's pretty cool. All right, next thing, if you're looking to hunt in Colorado this coming fall, I still have some cabin rental options available for the last week of archery and first, second rifle season. So if you're interested in hunting in Colorado this fall, definitely hit me up, adam@transitionwild.com, or go to the contact page on my website. Hit me up there. I can send you some more information on these cabins. They're at 10,000 feet, surrounded by the National Forest. Excellent hunting opportunities. And you've got a cabin and a bed and a warm place to sleep to come back to, all for $625 a person. So it's a pretty neat deal. So check that out. Send me a note if you're interested. Last thing before we get started, big development with some of the partnerships with Transition Wild. I can't release any info yet, but there's some pretty big things to come for me, which I will announce on the next episode, which is going to be podcast 41. So stay tuned to that. All right, on today's show, we have Brad Delman. He's my buddy. I've worked with him in the past, and he is just a shed hunting dog. He really knows the stuff on shed hunting and he loves it. And I myself, I'm a big shed hunter as well. It's something that I've just grown up doing and have loved it even when I lived in Michigan. And since I've moved out to the West, you know, when I first started kind of going about it, it was a learning curve for sure. Way different than just walking some field edges and bedding areas in my home state. So there's a lot of stuff that is different. There's some similarities, but Brad and I cover everything from, you know, first off, the shed hunting restrictions that Colorado Parks and Wildlife put into effect last year. So you can't shed hunt on public lands till May 1st. We talk about that, and then we kind of dive into some of the strategies and tactics and where to look for both elk and mule deer. So I thought it was pretty fitting. You know, it's April. You know, people are getting the bug to get out there and start walking and picking up some sheds. So I thought it'd be cool to kind of talk about that. And if you're ever out in Colorado or anywhere in the West during the spring, it's a fun way to kind of get out and explore and learn some new country. So it's pretty cool. So let's not wait any longer. Let's get Brad Delman on the line. All right, on the line with us now, we have Brad Delman on the show. How's it going, man?
I'm good, Adam. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing well, doing well. I'm excited that Colorado is finally starting to let up its winter grip, and the snow is melting, so, the weather's getting warm, so I'm ready to get out and do some shed hunting. How about you?
Yeah, it is that time of year, you know. Me not being an Eagle anymore down here in Denver, you know, I feel that way more than ever. So, you know, things have changed for me a little bit. You know, I'm down in the big city more full time. I'm ready to get up there, do some scouting, you know, see how much snow you guys have up there.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's been quite the winter, especially since last year. I mean, was so dry, and you know, there really wasn't much snow at all. This year in the high country, it's still holding pretty good. I mean, if you go up to like 8,000 feet right now, there's still a foot of snow on the ground, so it's pretty socked in, and hopefully it'll melt off here in the next couple of weeks, so everything will be cleared out by May 1st.
Yeah, I mean, for this time of year, for that much snow to be, you know, at that level, it sounds like you guys had a pretty good winter. You know, obviously I watch the news down here and try and keep up on, you know, weather updates up in your neck of the woods. So I've certainly been hearing about it. And if you've got that much still at 8,000 feet, you know, this time of year, you've had a pretty good, you know, amount of snow this winter for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So what have you been up to lately, Brad? I haven't talked to you in a hot minute. Have you been out to the Kansas farm, Illinois? You've been shed hunting out there. What's been going on in your neck of the woods?
Yeah, it's, you know, I've been busy, myself, and it has been a little while since I've, talked to you, which is, not good. We need to do this a little more often, but,
exactly.
So yeah, just a little kind of catch up to speed what we've been up to. We got that Kansas farm, last September, so hunted a little bit this, fall. It was good. You know, had quite a few bucks showing up. You know, Kansas is interesting. You know, you've got your resident bucks that, you know, are close by, but out there with everything being so open, you get some bucks that really travel, you know, from some distances. So it was interesting to kind of start doing a trail cam inventory and you know, see what was showing up. You know, ultimately after it was all said and done through the rut, you know, I was able to identify, you know, 23 different bucks, that had come through pretty regularly. But I'd say resident bucks were probably just a handful. So they really like to travel out there. So it's been fun learning a new state, a new type of hunting, you know, versus Illinois. It's just a little bit different. So that's been fun. Spent some time in Illinois for sure. Not as much as I would have liked or hoped, but you know, it is what it is. And just a side note on Illinois, we ended up just selling that, within the past few weeks.
No way.
That's good. It was good. You know, the plan was to sell that, you know, in the next year or two, but, you know, with the Kansas place, we're just trying to shrink our radius, get a little closer to Denver. It sure is nice driving 5 hours versus 12 to that Illinois farm. And I've always done that, you know, for the last 6 years. I've made 7 or 8 trips to that farm, you know, a year, and I always drive it, and it's getting kind of old. so we knew we were going to get rid of that farm here shortly. And start, you know, like I said, shrinking our radius, getting a little closer to Denver, so we're not traveling so much. Market was good out there. It was strong. Called a buddy I knew, who's in sales out there. And, we got it listed and got an offer in 2 days, quick closing, and the whole process was less than 6 weeks to, you know, start to finish. So that property is gone. I'm going to miss it. That was a new property. great river frontage. You know, we logged it last spring.
Yeah.
So we were able to kind of get a bunch of wood off of it, made a little money. So it was a good investment, you know, and we still, and we used it as, you know, recreation, you know, to get away. You can't beat a piece of land where you make a little money and you're able to have, you know, a lot of fun with it too. So, that was a good experience for sure. Going through the whole logging process was really cool. But that farm, the reason we did that logging was it needed it, you know, logged. And therefore, you know, that tree canopy was so mature and extensive that it never really let the light in to the forest floor that it needed to really create that thermal cover, winter browse, you know, 'cause I'd have bucks come in. It was a great rut farm. Those bucks would come in, you know, during the rut, and then they would take off and, you know, do their wintering somewhere else. So as far as the shed hunting aspect, you know, I never had much luck finding, you know, big antlers, mature antlers on that farm. You know, those mature deer would come in for a couple months. They'd usually show up mid-September, you know, be around for the rut, and then they'd disappear. And that was the point of doing the logging, you know, was to try and increase, you know, that habitat and hopefully hold those deer more year round rather yeah. than just, you know, in the fall. So, shed hunting out there was always kind of hit and miss. It depended on the food you had. It just, you know, there were some other factors, but I, you know, over the years, you know, I'd say I probably found, you know, less than a dozen antlers, a couple good ones, but majority were, you know, younger deer, 2.5-year-old, a couple 3.5-year-olds, but those 4, 5, 6-year-olds that were around during the rut, you know, they just disappear and we could never, you know, score on those antlers. So that was kind of the, you know, the thinking on that farm was to try and improve it with some logging. And we did, we used a forester, we went about it right. Very happy with the process. Again, you know, made a little cash, and probably ended up selling it a little, you know, sooner than we had hoped, but the market was good and I didn't want to miss out on that. So we just unloaded it. And now we're actually looking at another piece in Kansas, to kind of throw that investment money into you know, maybe now we'll have a couple places in Kansas that are a little bit closer that we can spend some time at. So that's, it's been definitely been keeping us busy, this spring. So that's kind of what I've been up to. Yeah.
Nice.
Have not been able to, focus on shed hunting out here like I would have hoped, but I'm getting that bug and, hopefully we'll start doing some scouting and hitting it hard here, once May 1 hits.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, you are the shed dog, Brad, and that's the whole reason of me having you on the podcast is you're probably the best shed hunter I know, and I just want to pick your brain on everything. And after you showed up last year to the office there, you called me and you pulled up outside, you know, like, hey, come outside, take a look at this. Your whole freaking truck bed was full of elk sheds. And I was like, damn, Brad, like, how do you do this, man? Teach me your ways. So here we are.
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I am no expert in this field whatsoever. You know, it's more for me, it's persistence, you know, putting on the miles, still learning my way, obviously. You know, I don't know, I've been doing it, you know, up there for probably the last 6 years. So, you know, I'm relatively new to it. But, you know, I read as much as I can. I watch as much as I can online, you know, trying to learn how to do it. I think my success has fully been, you know, just, putting on the miles, you know, sticking to it. And, you know, that's my deal. I, like I said, first and foremost, I'm no expert on this. I will offer the information that I can, Yeah, that's pretty much my story.
Yeah, what, you know, for me, I've always just been infatuated with shed hunting. Like, I truly just love
right.
it. Like, there's some people I feel like that do it, you know, kind of recreationally. They might go out one or two times, but then you have the guys like yourself, myself, that just, they think about it. Like, once it starts warming up this time of year, you're just constantly thinking about it. And I don't know what it is. Like, I just caught this bug a long time ago when I lived in Michigan, and it's just never really went away. And I feel like you're kind of the same person. You just love doing it and can't wait to get out there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and as far as the recreational side of it, you know, the people that do it, you know, here and there, it's just a way to get out, you know, and explore nature, you know, be in the mountains, get some exercise, especially, you know, when you're coming out of winter and you've been socked in all winter and you haven't been doing much. I mean, you get that cabin fever, you just want to get out and do it. And then there's, you know, then there's like you and I that cannot wait to get out there and start looking for these antlers. And what I think about it, you know, what I think so cool about it is that, you know, no human hand has ever touched these things. You're the first person to ever touch this.
Yeah.
And it's like a treasure hunt. You know, there's, you know, some people are better at it than others, you know, and that comes down to, you know, your preparedness, you know, what you do, to help you find those antlers before you even leave the house. So, you know, you've got plenty of things that you can do to kind of help you figure it out and cut down on that time of just going out there and walking aimlessly, you know, looking for antlers. You know, we all know the cliche spots. But there are other ways that I think you can kind of, you know, figure out where those animals are more likely going to be than not. And especially now that, you know, Colorado's bumped everything back to May 1, it's really a scramble because, you know, in the past when it was March 15th, you know, I would hit it hard day one, March 15th, and I was kind of done, you know, looking hard by May 1. You know, that 6-week period was that prime time where you could, you know, get out there and you could see, you know, starting now, May 1, you're starting to look into, you know, spring green up.
Yep.
And it's getting hard. You've got to look, you know, harder and your time frame is much shorter. So whatever you can do to, you know, eliminate those, you know, those spots that aren't so productive, you know, the better. So, but, you know, I grew up, you know, in Ohio doing some shed hunting, not, you know, nothing too seriously. You know, it was always fun to get out there in the woods because I loved just being in the woods, you know, and you'd find a few here and there, you know, you'd find a couple that the squirrels hadn't touched yet. But that's what's kind of cool about out here too, is I hear that's been chewed by a squirrel. I've found a couple that might've been chewed by a porcupine or, you know, drug around by a coyote or something, but you know, you don't have the squirrels, you know, taking them down to nubs, which is cool because you can go out in the fall and still find, you know, hard antlers that fell, you know, that previous spring that are still in really great shape. You could never do that in the Midwest. Plus, you know, without here and with all the public ground we have, you just have so much room to explore and roam. You know, where, you know, back in the Midwest or wherever you're from, you know, you might have a, you know, 100-acre parcel. And if the deer aren't there, they're not there. And you're not going to find any sheds. And out here, you can, you know, take a couple mile walk and actually, you know, find a handful of sheds, you know, and try different places and, you know, just really find them all over. So that's the difference for me. You know, I grew up doing it and I always enjoyed doing it, but until I got out here and started kind of really getting into it, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, it's a totally different ballgame. It's so much more fun out here.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. And you touched on it a little bit before we get in kind of more of the, I want to pick your brain on a bunch of strategy stuff and, you know, doing the maps and kind of pre-scouting. But, you know, May 1st is that regulation or the shed hunting restriction was put in place by Colorado Parks and Wildlife starting last year. And you'd mentioned previously before that it was March 15th, and in some areas there wasn't any shed restrictions. You know, some units before that you could even go all year round. What's your whole take on the whole May 1st thing? Like, I definitely think it's a good move because it was getting to a point where animals are getting pressured. There's too many people out there. But I feel like there are some loopholes in the system. Like, you know, for example, you could still go out and go turkey hunting on, you know, BLM land or, you know, some of these wintering areas or just if you want to go hike or whatever. But you're in those same areas, yet you can't pick up a shed. What's your whole take on it? Like, I feel like there should be some further regulations. Like, if May 1st is going to be the day, then, you know, we need to – I feel like the CPW needs to maybe designate certain areas that are closed completely to human traffic because there's always loopholes in the system and people are going to get around that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, this is all pretty new to us. I mean, that kind of what hit just last year. So I think they're still trying to feel their way out. I think something is needed for sure. I don't know if I agree with the May 1 date. I think something needs to be in place. I thought March 15th was always a good date. You know, I don't know. It's I'm torn. I know exactly, you know, what they're trying to do and it's, you know, commendable, you know, that they're trying to keep because, you know, shed hunting as you know, has become super popular and more people are doing it, you know, year after year. So they're trying to keep the people out, or, you know, as I don't know how to say it, but it's just, there's more people going out there now. So they're trying to back it up to, you know, eliminate that and decrease the pressure. But I don't know. I mean, March 15th was always a good date to me because, you know, if you were willing to go out, if you had a hard winter, like you did this year, you're probably not going to be traipsing around March 15th through a foot and a half of snow looking for antlers.
Yeah.
So therefore that would bump you back too. And it would give those animals, you know, their chance to get out of that, you know, that critical zone where they're, you know, lower on nutrition and they're waiting for that, you know, kind of warm up, you know, versus, you know, a year where, you know, it's very, very mild and, March 15th would be fine because obviously those animals are coming through the winter, better off. They've probably already started to move to higher ground. And, you know, so March 15th date is completely fine.
Yeah.
You know, I see that they're bumping it back to May 1 to keep the people out, but you know, I think you're trying to, the people that they're trying to keep out or by bumping it back is, you know, the folks that are, you know, maybe harassing these animals, and that's already against the law.
Yeah.
You know, to me as a responsible shed hunter or a good shed hunter, just like probably the majority of us, you know, when we're out there walking around, hiking around, looking for antlers, you know, the woods chasing these animals, trying to get these antlers to fall off, you know,
yeah.
If I'm slinking through, you know, a sage flat or, you know, some of the hills and I see animals and I see a deer with, you know, antlers still on his head, I'm changing my game plan. I'm going the other direction because I know if I don't, you know, bother that animal, he's going to stay there and I can come back in a couple weeks and maybe find those antlers. I've got a better chance of getting those antlers if I, you know, let that animal be and, you know, and he just kind of bounds over the hill. No big deal. I mean, these animals are prey animals. They're constantly day in, day out. There's always something after them.
Yeah.
So me as a shed hunter, you know, slinking through the woods, I don't feel like I'm doing any undue pressure to that animal, you know, as opposed to what he would normally feel, you know, day in, day out. Now,
yeah.
I understand, you know, more and more people are doing it, so they're trying to limit that. But the people that are doing it maybe incorrectly in using, you know, machines, you know, snowmobiles, four-wheelers, dirt bikes, whatever they're doing on certain lands to, you know, maybe look for these, you know, that's you're starting to get into that harassing. And that's already, you know, against the law. So I don't know. I feel like a little bit that this May 1 thing is helping to kind of police that. But, you know, you've already got a law in place to you know, guard against that harassment,
yep.
You know, kind of thing. So I don't know. I think something is definitely needed. I don't know if I agree with the May 1, but, you know, back to your point, you do have hikers out there anyway. You've got turkey hunters. So I think it needs to be kind of delved into a little further and some more guidelines put in place. You know, I just, it's the law is purely in my eyes, you know, meant to kind of hurt the responsible shed hunter.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in a perfect world, I'd like to see it as this. I'd like to see all Western states get on the same page and, kind of gauge, not necessarily set a certain date, you know, like May 1 year after year.
Mm-hmm.
I think if all right. all the states got on the same page, there was some sort of like kind of national legislation here in the West where states could gauge the weather, you know, because on a year like, you know, this winter, I think May 1st is pretty appropriate, you know, by the time, you know, stuff starts melting off and whatever, you know, the May 1st deadline is going to be pretty accurate. Now, somewhere like last year where we didn't have too much snow, you know, maybe yeah. It's April 1st or something, you know, I think, mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like with Colorado putting in the May 1st, deadline, I think you're going to see a lot of people going to Wyoming and Utah and pounding those spots, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I think if all the states got on the same page and said, all right, we're going to make a ruling, you know, case by case basis on a year assessment, you know, I feel like that's going to better everybody on multiple states, and it's just going to be better for the animals in general. So I don't know. That's my kind of take on it. I wish there would be some sort of national policy. Everyone could get on the same page, and then they set a date based on kind of what the weather in the winter would look like. That's just my opinion.
Yeah, yeah, and I could totally get on board with that. I mean, this is a new precedent, you know, out here in the West. You know, in the old days, it was, you know, you could go out whenever you wanted, look for antlers, and there weren't many people doing it. You know, it's just become so darn popular that you're just seeing more and more folks out there, and you know, and I'm sure there's some unwanted pressure on those animals, no doubt about it, and I know that's what, you know, Parks and Wildlife sees. And they're trying to curb. So,
yeah.
It's all a new thing out here for the West, and everybody's trying to find their way. Hopefully we can, get states more, on board together, and figure out a system. That's a good point you make. And, I could totally see something like that working. How soon that would happen, I don't know. I think it's probably going to stay state by state for a little while. But you know, we'll see what happens. It is what it is, you know, and as responsible shed hunters, we're going to follow the rules and, you know, still get out there and hit it hard and do what we can and do what we love. But, it's an interesting time, you know, with what's going on for sure.
Yep. For sure. Well, cool. Well, let's talk a little bit of strategy here, Brad. And I just kind of want to pick your brain of where you start. You know, you talked a little bit on it earlier, but you kind of start planning and maybe picking out some spots on your computer. So talk to us about how you use maybe Google Earth or Onyx Maps and how that plays into kind of maybe your scouting strategy before you start heading out there and putting boots on the ground. Talk to us a little bit about how you initially get started and what you're using for certain applications.
Yeah. I mean, you know, in the wintertime I live on Google Earth. I mean, I love just looking at terrain, looking at potentially where those animals might be given the current weather, you know, snow levels that winter, you know, so I Google Earth is an immense tool for really figuring all that out. Now, not to say it's 100% foolproof. I've isolated spots where I thought for sure, you know, animals would be and they weren't there. You know, it all depends on, you know, their needs and what they're finding in those certain areas. So
yeah,
Google Earth is crucial, especially me now being down here in Denver more full time. You know, I'm starting to look for places down here that I've never shed hunted or even thought about shed hunting, you know, in the foothills, looking for, you know, and I also use the Parks and Wildlife has a great, you know, Colorado hunting atlas, which is awesome for, you know, figuring out public versus private land, finding those lines, you know, being able to put layers on there to find summering, you know, areas, wintering areas, those transition zones. So those are probably the two that I use the most. And when I, you know, find a place on Google Earth, you know, you can only get so much from that, as far as the terrain features. If I've got a map, you know, if I've got an old topographic map that is for that area, I'll then kind of even bust that out and start looking at actual, you know, terrain and seeing like how steep certain areas, you know, are and how hard it may be to get to that area.
Yep.
For me, I'm trying to isolate spots that are, you know, off the beaten path, you know, but still at elevations where those animals could potentially be. I've got no issue, you know, hiking my butt off to get to a spot where, you know, I might find, you know, a single shed. You know, it wasn't last year because I didn't get out there as much as I liked. But the year before, I think when that last year, it was March 15th was the opening date. You know, and I always take my, obviously I've always got my phone. And when I don't have service, I've always got a GPS with me. So I'm constantly, you know, marking things on that, but I would always, you know, keep track of my daily travels. And, you know, and it would have been 2016, I guess, 2016, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, hiked a total of in 6 weeks, I hiked 306 miles.
Wow.
You know, looking for antlers. So I've got no issue, you know, kind of getting back in there and finding these little, you know, spots are kind of out of the way, that not a lot of people are kind of paying attention to or, you know, willing to hike into. So that's what I kind of start looking at, you know, on Google Earth. I just trying to find those spots that are kind of out of the way and, you know, a little further away than most people want to go look. And to be honest, that year I hiked that much, I maybe saw one other shed hunter, you know, looking where I was. So I'm clearly kind of getting off the beaten path and getting out there, you know, to areas that are less looked over. And I think that has to do with some of my success, you know. It just makes sense to me that the further you get away from roads and as long as they're viable spots, you know, you're going to find antlers. So
yeah, for sure.
That's what I kind of find, you know, look for on Google. It's just hard to get to places. Obviously looking at terrain features, you know, the cliche south facing steep slopes, are kind of your number one starting point. But I also look at, some east facing slopes too. I've found a lot of antlers on east facing slopes, and I don't know, granted that slope has, you know, some good thermal cover, and it's got some food on it. I feel like some of those animals, especially if it's a colder winter, like being on that east side because that's the first morning sun you get. So they're getting that sun kind of right away to warm up, and then they kind of migrate around those east slopes to the southeast and to the south and spend a lot of their time, you know, kind of around that kind of corner. So I'm looking, you know, not just typically for the south facing slopes, but any slope that's going to get the sun, that's got some cover, that's got food. And that's kind of where I start. And then I kind of, once I find a spot, then I really start kind of picking it apart, you know, making sure it's got bedding close by, or not too far away. Cause I mean, this time of year, those animals aren't going to travel very far to get food.
Yeah.
Same with water. That's another, you know, factor I kind of hone in on. You know, it's amazing what these animals will, endure for safety, especially big bulls. You know, they'll, if they can stay up as high as possible and the snow levels aren't too high for them to kind of, you know, compete with, they'll stay out of the way. You'll never see them. They don't, as you know, they don't follow those cows down like the young bulls will. And, you know, where it's easier and they can get food more readily. Those big bulls, if they can take it, they will stay out of the way. So that's kind of what I'm looking for, those kind of little places. Now, some years, you know, this year, it's going to be interesting to see. You guys have certainly had more snow this year than the past few. So we'll see if those animals are still sticking up, you know, at those higher elevations, and you know, and just taking it in order to stay safe. We'll see. I don't know. That you're not going to know until you get boots on the ground, get in there, you know, see what kind of sign you're looking at, and you know, you just really never know. I mean, it's no exact science for sure. You can only pick out those spots that look good, or you think they look good to you, and then really check them out.
Yeah.
It's there's no getting around it. You know, there's no getting around it. Google Earth is not going to tell you everything you want to know. You've got to get out there and look for them, no doubt about it.
Of course. Yeah. And one video I've put together on my YouTube channel, it's called Digital Scouting for Elk in Colorado. And it shows you how to download those overlays. And that was pretty helpful for me, you know, starting out, you know, like you can look at that
right.
And overlay this area that, oh man, that's pretty far off the road. It's a south facing slope.
Yeah.
It's in a kind of secluded basin. And, you know, that's going to get you in the ballpark. And like you mentioned, Brad, it's going to vary year to year, based on snow levels, but you know, it's, it at least gets you an idea and it helps you kind of get started, with kind of a general area. And then you get into picking apart certain terrain features and things to look for in that regard. What are some of the things that you look for specifically? I know myself, I kind of like to key in, like you said, get, if you're looking for, let's say, elk sheds, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the bulls seem to be kind of further off the beaten path. They're usually at higher elevations than the kind of lower herds that you'll see with just cows and spikes and the small bulls. But I like to look for those kind of secluded basins. They're further off the beaten path. And then within those areas, I like to look for like kind of benchy stuff and little aspen cuts that, you know, it seems like they like to kind of stay in, and it gives them some cover, but sunlight, and there's some food in there. Talk to us a little bit about like these, the spot within the spot, like what terrain features you're looking for, and kind of what kind of gives you a higher probability of finding antlers.
Yeah, that's a good question. That's a really good question. I don't know, you know, I mean, for me, like I said, for me, boots on the ground is the best case scenario. You know, I kind of isolate those spots and I'm like, yeah, I want to check that out. And until you really get in there and see what kind of sign, you know, is in those areas, I don't know. For me, you know, Google Earth shows me a general area, and then I'm the one that's willing to go, you know, hike the 6 miles to go check it out and really see what it looks like.
Yeah.
I feel like you can't get everything you need from, you know, Google Earth or whatever application you're using. Nothing beats getting in there and actually looking. Yeah. I mean, aspen cuts, you know, generally they get more light. You know, once the leaves drop, they get more light, the understory, there's definitely more growing in there. You know, I'm sure you've seen this, but you know, all these aspen trees, once you get up to certain elevations, all have, you know, the markings of where they've been chewed on by these elk that, that, you know, stick up there a little bit longer. And you can imagine these snow levels, you know, at certain times of the year, and these animals are still kind of hanging up there, trying to stay up there as long as they can before they get pushed out if the snow gets too deep, you know, and the only thing available is that cambium layer of those aspen trees. And they'll do whatever they can, you know, to get the nutrition they need to stay safe and stay at that elevation. And then it just, at some point it gets too much and they've got to come down. So, you know, bedding is important. You know, the close, you know, food sources are important. So you've got to kind of factor in, you know, like you said, those aspen cuts, what they're eating, you know, water, those benchy areas, because, you know, even though they're on those south facing steep slopes, they're not going to bed there. They're going to bed, you know, they're going to spend their nights there feeding. They're waiting for that sun to come up, spending as much time as they can there before they head off to bed. So obviously looking for those flat benchy ledges that are not too far apart, from feeding in water and those things. That's kind of where I kind of will break out those topo maps if I have them. Cause it shows me those real terrain features, as opposed to like a Google Earth that, you know, you can get a little bit out of it, but you know, if you've got a good topo map, it'll really show you those benches and they kind of really stick out. So, you know, for me, I don't know if this is the answer you're looking for, but, you know, I find that area and then I'm willing to kind of hike in there. Even if I find nothing, I need to get in there and see what kind of sign there is. Because if there's no sign, there's not going to be any antlers. Those animals are not in there. But if you walk in, you start to see tracks, you'll, even if at that elevation, there's probably, even come May 1, there's probably going to be a little bit of snow up there and you'll see tracks, you know, you'll see, you know, the droppings of kind of hopefully what you're looking for, not cow droppings, but you know, the clumpy bull droppings that you're looking for. So, I mean, that's my method. You know, I haven't, like I said, I'm still learning this process and I'm still kind of learning more on the, you know, the application side, as far as these apps and whatnot, what to look for. I'm still pretty new at this. But for me, like I said, it's putting on the miles, it's patience, it's moving slower than I used to. You know, when I'm looking for this, for these antlers, I found that I have much better luck and I am much more successful the slower I move and kind of picking areas apart.
Yeah, of course. And like I said, there's nothing that beats actually getting out there and doing it. But like this time period right now, I've been kind of driving around and, you know, glassing quite a bit. And I've been watching a couple groups of bulls lately, and they kind of feed during the morning and evenings on this private that is kind of like alfalfa hayfield. But then at right. night and later in the morning, they're bedding up on public on some BLM behind it. So I'm hoping, you know, it's not for me, it's not really the stereotypical kind of like high secluded, you know, aspen benches that's like pretty low elevation this year just because of the snow. Mm-hmm. But I'm watching these bulls and right. I'm hoping I'll be able to go in there May 1st and pick up some antlers on the BLM, you know, behind there. So is that a big part of like your strategy too, is just like kind of getting to a spot where you can glass some of these areas and just keep an eye and locate these bulls? Is that a big part of your plan going into the shed season?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, you know, last year, as you mentioned, you know, when I called you at the office and rolled in with a few
truckload of bed. Sheds.
I wouldn't say a truckload because I carried them all out in one load on my back. But that's a big part of it. You know, you've got to get out there and scout. You know, if you can, you know, just get on the roads, do some glassing from the roads. I mean, optics are super important. You know, a good spotting scope obviously helps. But yeah, riding the roads, looking up, you know, in those high basins, you know, kind of looking a little further than somebody else might think where they are. Like you said, these bulls sounds like they're a little bit lower than normal. And that tells me, you know, snow levels have certainly pushed them down. It's also going to make those antlers probably a little harder to get, because if they're, you know, they could easily be in those alfalfa fields, they can be in that transition zone, you know, heading up to bedding. Yep. But I guarantee, you know, some other folks are probably watching those same animals. So, you know, when the animals,
don't tell
that's
me
why
that,
I don't
Brad.
Like these
they're
big...
mine.
Yeah, I hope so. You better get up there, daylight on May 1. But, you know, that's why I don't like, you know, I obviously prefer these more mild winters, not for the, you know, the health of these animals, because you have more survivability, but I prefer these antlers to be, you know, much higher, and you got to work harder to get them. And that's where I kind of succeed. And I like them spread out more. You know, when you have these big snow years, these animals get pushed down, and usually it's, you know, what kind of ground is, you know, down in the valleys, you usually get ranches and farms, and it's a lot of private land. So a lot of these antlers end up, you know, getting dropped there and picked up, you know, actually, March 15th. I mean, that kind of goes back to, you know, the whole March 15th, May 1 thing that we were discussing. You know, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think
there's no restrictions
if it's
on private.
Gonna be May, yeah. Well, isn't it March 15th for private? Or can you look for them whenever?
I don't think there's any restrictions on private. I think it's anything goes, because I mean, it's not like something they can really enforce, really on that
right.
end. So I think it's open game anytime on private, but May 1st on anything public.
Got it. Okay. So yeah, I mean, you know, so when you have these big snow years, you obviously you're forcing these animals down, and these antlers are more accessible. So come May 1, it's going to be a mad dash to, you know, hopefully get your share. But you know, it is what it is. I prefer obviously those years where they're a little more spread out, because I obviously like to get out there and hike as much as I can. But you know, it's it is what it is, and you got to do what you can to make sure you succeed. So
yeah. Talk to us a little bit about last year's scenario, because I think that's a pretty textbook you know, spot that you've figured out. But talk to us about that. Like, what does that area look like specifically as far as terrain? Like, are these bulls up on a flat bench on the backside of a, you know, canyon or somewhere secluded? Like, what does that look like specifically, and what makes it so good?
Yeah, sorry, I got a little off topic there on that last, kind of just divulged into something else. But back to the scouting thing, you know, I mean, you can ride roads and see what you can see from the road, but sometimes you've got to, you know, get out and do a little hiking. And fortunately, you're allowed to hike before May 1 and you know, do other things rather than just pick up an antler. So, you know, it's good to get up, you know, get a good vantage point, do some glass, and, you know, see if you can find some animals that way. You know, and I do it from a distance. You know, I'm not influencing those animals at all. They have no idea I'm there. And you just try and, you know, find those areas where those animals are hanging out. And then you're leaving them alone. And just like last year, that's exactly what happened, and was able to go in there May 1 and find, you know, a decent amount of antlers. They were all within, you know, a 500-yard radius. And clearly those animals found something that they liked, within that terrain feature. It was kind of a benchy area. They had plenty of you know, it's a nice little secluded sage flat that was down over the top of the mountain, dropping into a kind of a big creek bottom. But when I say creek bottom, I mean like gorge. It's very steep and rugged back there, but the area where all these antlers were on a sage flat, probably 100 yards wide by 400 yards long. So it was one little spot where they found food, they found security. I'm sure they were going down to that creek down below. I don't know exactly how they were getting down there because it's so darn steep. I feel like there's got to be a somewhat easy way for them to get down there, because I feel like they were probably going down there to water, maybe not every day, because I'm sure they were, you know, using snow and whatnot for some of that, but I know they were getting down there somehow because they've got to cross that gorge at some point. So there's got to be an easier way for them to get down. I haven't figured that out yet, but they were simply just off the top of the mountain on the backside where they had zero pressure and knew they were going to see nobody back there. And they just lived their winter back there. And by the time I got in there May 1, they were long gone. Who knows where they went? You know, they went off to, you know, wherever they probably summer and started doing that stuff. But I found three match sets and two singles in that small, probably 500 yard, you know, radius area. And they were just, they had everything they needed, you know, and they were just out of view and felt completely content with being there and stayed there until they dropped their antlers and then moved off. So, Scouting, you know, when you can get off the roads and do a little hiking, getting to a high vantage point where you can see a lot of ground, you can really locate those animals. And if it's you know, an area where you've got some bulls hanging out, just leave them alone, you know, let them go. And you don't bother them, they'll stay there and those antlers will drop and you can go in and hopefully pick them up.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds, what you're describing is, it sounds like the perfect storm. You've got seclusion, you know, you're miles off the road. You've got some sort of like terrain feature that makes them hard to get to. Sounds like there's a canyon, you know, kind of below them. That's real rugged and maybe like some, you know, rugged stuff behind them. They've got a flat bench, so the terrain's pretty nice. They've got plenty of sun. You know, there's food there in the sage and the grass, and then you know, probably some bedding close by as well. So it sounds like the perfect storm there of everything that they need, and you're just kind of waiting them out and going in there and getting them. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. In that area, I had hunted before, I don't know, a couple years prior to that, did some mule deer hunting in there and had always found sign, you know, pretty strong elk sign, bull sign, rubs, you know, old droppings. So I knew they used that area at some point, and I think probably some of them even used it, you know, during the rut and held, you know, cows in there.
Yep.
But I never found any other, you know, sheds, and I don't know that somebody else hadn't been in there at one point and picked up a couple sheds. I don't know. And maybe it's a new area that these elk found, that they really liked and it was a great food source and, you know, had everything they needed to, you know, ride out that winter right there. I'm hoping that they're up there again. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to do any scouting yet this year. Kind of being away from that area. So I'm hoping to get up there in the next couple of weeks and take my same hike that I did last year and hopefully locate some animals up there and see if they're still hanging around. My guess is they've probably moved off, somewhere lower. but I won't know until I really get up there and kind of take a look.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is clearly a different winter than last winter. So I expect something different. I don't expect them to be there again, but hopefully I'll be pleasantly surprised when I get back up in there and find an antler or two. So we'll see.
We'll see.
And I think they're, you know, some animals have areas year after year that they really like. They like to spend their winters, but sometimes, you know, there's nothing they can do about it. Mother Nature pushes them out of there and they've got to go somewhere different. So this is obviously clearly a different winter than last. So I don't expect the same result, but we'll we'll see.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one thing I've really noticed too is like when you find antlers, you know, if you're finding, yep, you know, a shed here, shed there, I kind of pay attention to the elevation that I'm at, because sometimes I've seen it where you've got a bad snow or a hard winter, and those animals, mm-hmm, are kind of right at the snow line. So like, let's say antlers are dropping, you know, mid-February for mule deer or something, and the snow level's at a certain point, I feel like they're in those areas where the ground's exposed. And mm-hmm, I find a lot of times if I just find antlers at a certain elevation, I can stay along that same kind of elevation pattern in a different area, and I end up finding sheds pretty much in the same elevation point. Do you kind of see the same thing sometimes?
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think all those mature animals, they want to be safe. So they'll do whatever they can to make sure that they're going to survive. They're going to be safe. So I think, you know, they want to be as high as possible away from all the people in the valleys. So yeah, I think they, you know, they follow that up the mountain. And if that snow line is at 8,500 feet, you know, when those more mature, healthy elk start dropping in early March, you know, then I think you're going to probably find a lot of antlers at that elevation, you know, in that specific area. But yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, you'll find them at that same elevation level, you know, across the mountain.
Yeah.
I think what you're saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, 100%, 100%. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit, because we've been talking mainly on elk right now, kind of more secluded, higher basins, you know, south facing, yep, slopes. Let's talk a little bit about mule deer, because you know, it seems like mule deer are at a much lower elevation. Elk in general, they're just hardier, right? They can handle the deeper snows, they can handle the higher elevation, the cold, and be exposed to that a little bit more. But you know, I've noticed the deer, they got to get lower. They can't handle the deep snow like the elk can. So talk to us a little bit about the differences in mule deer sheds versus maybe elk sheds, and, you know, some of the different terrain features and elevation levels in that regard.
Yeah, so I think you're 100% right. You know, it's just a smaller animal. Their legs are shorter. They just can't handle the snow like an elk can. They're taller. They can wade through that stuff and bigger bodied, you know, they're just hardier.
Yep.
So yeah, mule deer, obviously even mature. I mean, I've found some really good, you know, mule deer sheds at a pretty low elevation, but I still feel like they're still a little out of the way, out of view, you know, over the tops of the ridges that you can't see from, say, roads. Not to say that they're not moving down at night and hitting those alfalfa fields and that those lower elevations, but they do the same thing,
yeah,
just at a lesser extent. I think that the elk do. They move down, then they move back up and kind of get out of view and spend their days, you know, bedded on, you know, those benches where they can, they've got, you know, escape down, up, you know, whatever. But they're just at lower, you know, lower elevations, 100%. And when I talked earlier about, when I talk about those east facing slopes, some of my best, mule deer spots have been those east facing slopes, where those animals, those mature bucks have stayed up a little higher. They're looking for that early, you know, sunshine so they can warm up a little faster and then shift around to those south facing slopes. So, I've been surprised to find as many mule deer sheds on those east facing slopes as I have. That's been kind of my one little trick with mule deer. And I don't know what it is. I really have no idea. They just seem to like those slopes. As long as they've got cover and food, they tend to gravitate to those. But then obviously shift around to the south facing, they kind of, you know, follow that sun around that corner and get on those south facing slopes, obviously, because tons and tons of mule deer sheds are found on those slopes year in, year out. But you know, it's they do the same thing that elk do, just at a lower elevation. So I kind of look for the same things. You know, a couple things are a little different here and there. When you get to those lower elevations, I think you know, you do get the antlers a little more spread out than elk. You know, if elk can only go so high, so you'll find them at that same elevation like we were just talking about, pretty commonly. But I think mule deer can still, it got, because they're lower, they can still move around and reach more area and therefore spread out those antlers a bit. So I find deer antlers to be a little more spread out. Elk I find to be a little more concentrated, if
yeah.
that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. What's your process of glassing? I mean, are you spending a lot of time and finding a lot of antlers through the glass and getting up on a vantage point, or are you just strictly like pounding the boots on, you know, sage flats and these areas? Like, kind of what's your breakdown? Are you glassing half the time? Are you walking half the time? Like, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I glass a lot more than I used to. You know, when I first started, it was all about getting out there. I thought I had to cover as much ground as possible, as fast as possible. And, you know, as I've done this more, I've learned that the slower you go, the more you find. The more you glass, the more you find. So, yeah, I like finding a vantage point. You know, it's super important to have good optics. You know, I'm not always lugging, you know, my spotting scope's a little bulky, so I'm not always lugging that thing around. I'd like to get a nice, smaller, more compact, but still powerful, you know, spotting scope that I can take with me all the time. Because mm-hmm. Some slopes, you get them just a little far away, and with your binos, you know, is it a stick or is that an antler? You know, but if I had a spotting scope, I'd be able to, you know, figure that out.
Yeah,
you know, and that would keep me from hiking all the way around the basin to go look and find out that it was a stick. We've all done that. But, you know, I glass a lot more than I used to. And one thing that I found to be super important when you are glassing, whether you're using just your binos or a spotting scope, is a good solid rest of some kind. If I take my spotting scope, obviously I'm always taking a small tripod, and I've got it on a kind of a fluid head ball mount, which really lets me kind of scan smoothly, you know, not kind of bounce around and jerky. Some of your mounts, you know, we have the twist handle and you're kind of moving it and you can only move it as smooth as your hand goes, you know?
Yeah.
But if you get a good fluid head, you know, you can really move it smoothly, and hold it nice and steady and really, see more antlers that way. And the same with your binos, you know, I don't always have a little tripod with me for my binos. But sometimes I do, and I've got an attachment where those binos lay right on top, and it's got a strap that goes over top to hold them nice and steady. So I'll do the kind of the same process that I do with my spotting scope, but I don't always, if I'm just going out, you know, for a short trip, I'm not always taking, and if it's like, you know, if I'm hiking and I'm trying to minimize weight, I'm not taking that bino just for my, or my tripod for my binos. So, you can fashion, you know, even if you just get a couple sticks and tie them off with a piece of string and make your own little bipod, whatever you can do to give yourself a better rest is going to help you kind of pick apart an area better. I've looked at slopes with binos just by holding them, trying to put my, you know, my elbows on my knees and hold them as steady as possible. And then you'll whip out a spotting scope with a super solid rest and it's nice and smooth. And you'll actually pick out an antler that you didn't see with your binos, just because you were moving, you know, slower, more steady. It was more clear, if you know what I'm saying. So binos, spotting scope, definitely glassing way more than I used to. And then I'll, you know, if I find one, then I know where I'm heading, and then I'll kind of start picking apart that area. But, you know, getting that good vantage point, as much ground as you can cover without walking is going to help. It'll kind of help you figure out kind of the direction to go. And then from there, it's just boots on the ground, checking sign, seeing how fresh it is. and then picking that area apart, you know, and that's the hard part. The easy part, sitting on a hill, kind of looking for them, and then, you know, finding out what direction you're going to go.
Yeah, for sure. Well, all good stuff, Brad. And, you know, we've definitely covered a lot of ground here and lots of good tips and strategies that we can put to use here, over the next month or two. And, but I want to leave on a note. Me and you went shed hunting together. What was that? Like a year or two ago. And, it was a pretty adventurous day to say the least. We rode in on Quiet Cat bikes, and I think this was before the shed restriction of May 1st. I think this was wasn't it in like March sometime where we went up?
Yeah, I think it might have been that last year before it switched.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was that year or the year before. I don't know, but it was. Yeah, it was a late March, early April trip for sure.
Yeah, so me and Brad grab a couple of bikes and we go into this area. It's a gated road, but you know, you can still access it. But we went around it on the e-bikes, and in the morning going in, everything was real solid and frozen, and everything was fine. But on the way in, I ran over this snowbank. in the first half of it was like, you know, north facing, so it wasn't getting the sun. But when I crested the snowbank hill, the other side was south facing, so my tire dropped down into that and I freaking went over the handlebars. So I crashed on the way in, and you know, get all scarred up or whatever. Dust myself off. Bike was fine. I was fine for the most part. And we went in. We had a good time. We had we found a couple sheds. You found a really nice muley shed, I think, right off the start, right? That nice 5x5.
I did. Yeah. We parked up top, and we were coming down, you know, just a little kind of finger ridge, trying to get down to the sage below. And we're coming down. I looked to my right, and there was a really good one laying back there. I'm very surprised we didn't find the other side, considering how big it was.
Yeah.
It was definitely an older deer, more mature deer. I totally expected to find that along that ridge somewhere, but we never did. And we looked pretty good for it too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That goes to show, you know, you never know. I mean, everybody says, you know, the bigger, more mature deer, you know, will drop somewhat close to one another, but I don't know. It depends on the deer, you know, some drop the same, you know, side by side every year. Some of them hang on to them. You just never know. But I was surprised that we didn't find that. But, that was a good day. That was quite an adventure.
Yeah.
I remember that fall, very, very well, watching you go over those handlebars, putting your shoulder into the ground. And, yeah.
It was pretty funny. You found that shed, and then I found another mule deer shed. We found some other stuff too, but, you know, we found a couple brown ones, which is fun. But, you know, I took that whole loop took probably about 4 hours or so. By the time we got back up to the road, it was around noon or 1 o'clock, and it'd been warming up pretty good. So what had happened is when we got back on the bikes and we're heading back out on the road was just an absolute muddy mess from hell. And that clay dirt, you know, like my four-wheel drive truck struggles in that clay, you know, when it gets real nasty and soupy. So, so me and Brad are coming out on the bikes, and the mud is just caking up on all the tires. We're just struggling. There was so much mud that it literally stopped the bikes, because there was so much mud on the tires. There was like 2-3 inches of mud on the outside of the tires. It literally just plugged up the wheels, so we couldn't even move. I broke a derailleur on the bike and ended up having to push it out like a mile, and then we just coasted down the hill. But it was quite the adventure that day.
Yeah, hindsight being 2020, you know, we should have got out of there a little sooner than we did. We knew there was plenty of snow on that road, and it was going to be, and it was a nice day. It was a warm day. It was sunny. And, you know, we should have known that it was going to be all melted and loose when we came out. And it certainly was. Yeah, it was slow going.
Yeah, yeah.
It was slow, even slower when you broke that derailleur.
Yeah, we probably.
And then having, you know, having so much snow on them that we had to take them to the car wash to hose them down. I mean, it was that much mud. It was crazy.
I was going to say, I think I spent $10 at the car wash just hosing down the bike.
Yeah, I don't know. What was our ride in? Maybe 15, 20 minutes, but it probably took us, what, an easy 2 hours to get out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we were in, I think, about 5 miles on that road, and when you got to push it through mud for a couple of those miles, it made for slow going. But man, one hell of a story and one hell of a memory I'll never forget. That was a lot of fun.
Never forget it. And I think that's the only time you and I shed hunted. Maybe that's why you haven't come back out with me.
Hey, yeah, no kidding, Brad. You're making me crash, break things. You know, I'm never going shed hunting with you again.
you had a much harder. You had a much harder ride than I did. My ride was easy compared to yours.
Yeah. You got the good stick on that turn. But speaking of which, we need to link up for some trips this year. We should at least do one together. We'll have to figure that out here to head out and put some miles on. That'd be real fun.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe when I come up, you know, we're heading out of town. We're going down to Austin here this week for a few days. Have you been down to Austin?
I have driven through there. I haven't spent any time, but I've heard it's a really, really cool spot.
Yeah, neither one of us have been down there, so we're kind of chomping at the bit to get out of here, get out of town a little bit, and go check out a new city. So yeah, we're looking forward to that. But anyway, when we get back, I'd like to kind of get up that way and look some things over, and maybe we can kind of take a ride together and look at some stuff. But and if we can't even link up for that, we'll definitely, you know, that first week of May, when everything opens up, we'll get out there and hit it.
Heck,
I'll show you some of my little honey holes.
I won't tell anybody, Brad.
No, I know you won't. I know. That's why I'm taking you.
Well, sounds good, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on the show, and you know, we'll have to link up here soon. And again, thanks for your time, and we'll talk to you later, Brad.
Thanks, Adam. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, and you know, congratulations with everything. Transition Wild, man, you're killing it. You're doing a good job. So. Love hearing all the stuff that you're saying about on your podcast and all the other stuff you're putting out. So good job.
Appreciate it, Brad. Appreciate it, man. We'll catch you on later.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks, Adam.
All right. And there it is. Another episode in the books. Big thanks to Brad for coming on the show. Had a blast talking with you, and definitely look forward to get out and do some shed hunting with you this spring. So I appreciate everybody listening. That was really cool. Again, Brad is kind of my go-to expert that I consult whenever I've got a shed hunting question. So hope you guys learned a thing or two and, you know, found that interesting to hear about. So again, I appreciate you tuning in. All right, that is it. Make sure you go to transitionwild.com, subscribe, and leave me that 5-star review on iTunes and Stitcher and Google Play. That'd be much, much appreciated. Thanks to everybody who left reviews and did everything for the Vortex giveaway. That's pretty cool. And, you know, that was fun to do, and hopefully we can do more giveaways like that in the future. So, again, appreciate you guys. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.